Listen, sir, with all due respect, you just have to answer the questions. They're very simple, right? We've gone through this many, many times. You have murdered yet another project. We have the evidence. Your alibis don't check out. We have people who confessed that you did these crimes. You allowed them. And you yourself were there and murdered yet another project. It's been how many at this point?
Far too many.
Far too many?
Far too many.
Right.
Too many to count.
Too many to count.
So, Kevin, we need to talk, man.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Nonsense Chase channel. I'm your host, Roger Feliciano. With me, as always, this is Luis Jimenez.
We are back. This is season 4, ladies and gentlemen.
Not so serious podcast on the Not So Serious channel. That's right. Man, it feels good.
Yeah.
Season 4. I know what you're thinking. Is this a desk?
Mahogany?
Not quite.
No.
The budget does not get us there.
No.
But it is a nice, fine piece of wood. And right here, run all the slides you want, buddy. It's a green screen. I mean, no, we actually are in a studio. That's being portrayed right here.
Yeah.
No, just because there's a forest now, Winter Escape, Mount Everest.
You know that there's two editors that edit this, right?
And yeah, we, yeah, okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. You got this. All you have to do is find pictures about everything I just said and just plop it back there. Anyways, You've read the title, you've clicked the video, you know what we're talking about. The question, is the MCU bad? This is a question that has been asked for a while now. The internet has been going crazy asking this question. The debates on Twitter have gone, just keep going. They're probably happening right now as we speak. Is the MCU bad? Well, today we aim to answer that question, hopefully. Yeah, just gonna go like I'm just gonna ask my partner here real quick. Yes or no? No need to elaborate. Is the MCU bad?
It's getting bad.
It's getting
it's
bad.
Getting bad.
It's getting bad.
It's getting
okay.
To a point where it's like, I don't like what this is smelling.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock does not like what this is cooking.
The Rock does not like what this is cooking. Okay, so I think you can get a little bit closer. There you go. Get the frame. That's better. Just let him adjust the mic. So yeah, so the MCU, it's getting bad. In my opinion, is the MCU bad? Yes. It is now entered bad territory. We're gonna be running here comparing movies. We're gonna be talking specifically about Ant-Man Quantumania, the last film, and how it did not exceed expectations at all. Mine or general public, even though a lot of people are enjoying this movie, that's fine. But we're going to talk about why it is that these movies are bad. And I'm going to be taking the stand of a cinematographer, someone who enjoys movies. And yes, seeing it from an unbiased point of view, because I do enjoy comic book movies. I do enjoy the superhero genre a lot when it is done correctly. It just so happens that the MCU, as of late, has not been doing that.
Yeah.
So we have essentially, like, I'm going to be disclosing, like, explaining what, like, the important things about filmmaking are, right? And I used this comparison. I decided to go, you know, since we're going to be talking why Ant-Man 3, or in previous projects, as it's happened before as well, have failed, and we're going to compare it to something that usually you go like, okay, so if you compare Ant-Man, Quantumania, with Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, it's like, oh, that's not a fair comparison.
No.
Let's go all the way back. Let's go to the beginning. Let's compare this movie to Iron Man, the movie that started it all.
The movie that wasn't touched by Disney's greedy hands.
And we are already starting a controversial, I guess, point of view. I don't think Disney's the problem. It helped. It helps on making these movies, I guess, bad. But I don't think that's the case, because Disney came in pretty early on.
Around, I think it was when the first Soldier came out. I don't know if
first
that was
Avenger? Captain America, the first Avenger? Avenger?
Sorry, I said so? First Soldier, I'm sorry. First Avenger, I think that was either the movie before, it was the first Avenger, because it was Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, and the last one to come in was Captain America. That was the movie leading up to Avengers. Avengers 2012, it got bought in 20. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think it was around that time. You are right. Like, they kind of came in. I want to say, like, the first three projects. I think it was Universal who did it, like, with the help of Universal. Yeah. And Marvel Studios at the time was independent. Obviously, they tried to finance all the movie. Yeah. So, you know, it was a good success. It was a good first swing at a bat. Yeah. And
so, that's the thing. So when you take a movie which had zero expectation from the public, but major expectations for the studio that they were creating, right?
It's a make or break.
Like, this is, you know, we're taking a risk here. We are, you know, we're taking a director, Jon Favreau. We're giving him the story, and he is going to be the one to, like, birth this, like, help us out. This is essentially, and this is Lucasfilm with the first, when they released
A New Hope.
You know, it's like, shit, this is a big project, this is a small thing, and let's get there, right? With the first Iron Man, the MCU actually, I'm gonna go for Marvel Studios. I'm gonna call it that. Yeah. So Marvel Studios with Iron Man, they were actually making film back then. They were making a movie. The whole process, when you think about it, right? And it was funny, because when we talked about it, when we were planning on this to make this podcast episode, you said, "Oh, you looked at behind the scenes, and it actually looked like they were in a set. They had practical suits. They had all of these things that they were worrying about. There was a lot of people on set, you know, and there was very little. Yeah, there was visual effects and CGI, but it was very minimal. Like, the actor was always there. Even when the suit was on, the actor was wearing the suit."
For reference, obviously, like, the suit obviously is going to be, like, very weighty, but for reference, and, you know, you can put in visual effects was going to happen through and through.
Exactly. I'm not expecting fucking Robert Downey Jr. to fly a suit in the fucking sky, right? The suit up scene, that is obviously visual effects, but there's the other thing. It is good visual effects, which is what we're missing. We don't have that in the latest movies coming from Marvel Studios. Like, their CGI is subpar, and I am not blaming the artists, because they are not the problem.
No.
Like, Ant-Man Quantumania, they changed the ending a month before the movie was in a release. How can you expect something good to come out of that when you're doing it a month before the release of the movie?
And you're having a time crunch that you know you have a date to release, right?
Exactly.
You're putting the project. You have all the things. Yeah. All right, everything's good. And then they tell you, I forgot. So, like, we just shot something new. Minimal. I need it by next month still. Can you try and do it? And, you know, you're kind of taking in all these new shots that weren't in the file, right?
They weren't in the original project, period. You have to then...
to do that by the date.
Yeah.
And, man, you really can't have any employer, whether it's Disney, whether it's Universal, any type of company, you shouldn't be having their incompetence, or not even incompetence, I wouldn't say. I would just say lack of care for other people, because they know that they're working with extra people. The director doesn't know jack shit about visual effects or how to do it. That's not his job.
But and that's a mistake, right? Marvel Studios and this is, you know, we're going to, like, organize this, but this is, like, the beginning, the starting statements. Marvel Studios directors don't know anything.
No.
They haven't had anything to direct. A director should know. A good director is in every process of the making of the movie. We're talking about pre-production, the director is there, right? There's pre-production. There is actual production when they're filming. The director is obviously there. Now, the director's job is, I've mentioned this thousands of times, but for those who do not know, the director's job is just to direct the actor. He is on set the day that it's rolling. He's not telling anyone what to change. To change the lights, change this. I don't like this prop. No, because that is why you had rigorous work in the pre-production days. The pre-production days, the director is approving all the props, everything from the art department, all of the sets, all of the costume design. He is approving all of this. So when the day of the shooting comes, there shouldn't be any mistakes because we already ran through it. All the lighting, all the camera positions, that was the cinematographer and the director sat down. They chose which camera angles they wanted for every single scene. Then they break all of this down and they have a list of shooting and they divide that by shooting days and a shooting schedule. So each day they're shooting something. It's normally, you know, you don't shoot from the beginning to end of the film. You shoot depending on location and time. So I've explained to do. So, oh, let's say we're filming this right now, right? And it needs to be at midnight. Then we have in the movie, there's like multiple scenes that we're doing at midnight. You're not going to wait every day. No, you're going to shoot all of that in one day.
Right.
And then you edit it. Power of the, you know, see. Movie magic, right?
See.
So all of that is done there. The directors for Marvel Studios don't seem to understand all of that. They also, the aspect of post-production, the director is also there with the editor. Not all the time, because that's the thing. Every movie does have a director's cut. I know that, and I hate that the internet has like made that. You hear that, and you're like, ugh. Another director's, every single director has that. Because a lot of directors do enjoy to edit their own films as well. And that is what is known as the director's cut. Now, the producer can come in and say, hey, look, this wasn't the original plan. We need to cut, maybe the hour needs to be this long. And that's where the director and the editor normally works things out. So you technically do almost always get those two things. So a movie is done in three phases. You have it on when you write it, when you're filming it, and when you edit it. There is always three different films. What you write isn't necessarily what you film, and what you film isn't necessarily how it ends up in the final product.
Right.
Which, this makes sense. Here's a problem. It seems like Marvel Studios has nothing, it doesn't know what they're doing, right? They have announced all of these projects, and that's another problem. It is hyping up the public for all of these projects to come out in this specific time frame, and then it's always like, you know what's going to come. And then social media and news. Like, I miss when you went into a movie to watch something you had no idea was going to come out.
Right, yeah.
You would just, you hadn't even seen a trailer.
You might even get a nugget on a post-credit. And you're like, are they making, is that making Thor? When Thor's hammer? Like,
yeah.
That's Thor.
And even then, it was like something you didn't even recognize. You went home and you saw it on the internet. You're like, fuck, you watch it again, you're like, there it is.
I thought about this. You know, in Iron Man 2, they just nonchalant brought Steve's shield.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh. I don't remember that until I was older, and I was like, that's fucking Steve's shield. And they make a big deal about it. Do you know what this is? It's exactly what I need to get this thing to work, which is, you know, ironic because, you know, Avengers and all that. So those were fun. Those were the fun cameos. Those were the fun Easter eggs. Now it's not that. Now it's name dropping. The actor is here next to me, or you get an end credit scene that is very in your face.
Right. Yeah.
And no te equivoques, Fulanito will come. Like,
claro, hey.
Will come back. You don't need to tell me that he's coming back. Number one, I know. Number two, why tell me? I want to maybe not know, so I can get more impressed. But anyways.
Also, it's a little bit like a duh moment when.
In this context, when
Kang basically dies.
Yeah.
And you get all the bullshit outside of the credit scene. Kang the Conqueror will return you.
Yeah, shit, Sherlock, yeah. He has a movie, he has an Avengers movie called after him. I know he's coming back.
There's a show coming this year that I know I'm going to see him.
Exactly. Like,
okay.
So, like, get your shit straight. But now, let's break down this movie with every single piece, like, of cinematography. And I'm specifically going to be focusing on writing. Let me see if I remember correctly. Yeah, I was writing, directing, camera, like the cinematography in that case would be like, you know, like camera, yeah, camera angles and all these things. And I think I'm going to hand in there visual effects and editing.
Okay.
I'm going to break it down to like those five categories, right? In terms of writing, let's talk about like overall all the movies that have come out. In terms of writing, let's start with the first one, Iron Man, right? This was a movie. Let's see if you can go along with what I'm going to do.
Okay.
This was a movie about a millionaire, billionaire maybe.
See, see, see.
He was an arms dealer. He's a gun manufacturer in America. You are going to get rich. Obviously, you know, your dad was also the millionaire.
He's a Nepo baby.
Exactly. There you go. Thank you.
Tony's a Nepo baby.
Exactly. So then you keep doing this, and then he's this man who has all this money, and then he's presenting arms dealings, and he goes to the war, and I'm assuming Afghanistan. I think they're in the Middle East. Typical Middle East in movies, right? You go to Afghanistan, whatever, Iraq, wherever the fuck you are, there's a war, and then he's presenting his new weapons to the military. Aha, look at this. Amazing. I'm going to go. Shocker, terrorist attacks him because he's a billionaire, and he builds weapons. What do the terrorists want?
Weapons.
Because this is what's always happening. Now, let's talk about this in a political standpoint. We all know that the war against the Middle East and America was created by America.
Yeah.
Simply by going there, saying, I want this. They say, no. Hey, here's a gun. They're armed. We have to defend the, you know, it's like,
how did they get the arms?
It's like, hey, I want this. You cannot have it. Look at this. They're armed. We have to attack now. We have to attack. That's basically what happened. It's probably wrong, but not really. I'm going to actually leave the phone out. Struggle there a little bit. So you get that, right? Obviously, that's what they want. So we're tying in a good... So this is the story so far. And then we also have a political, like... I was going to say agenda. That's not the word I wanted to use. But they have a political background because almost every movie is based on what's happening to the person's life or for the person's from. So millionaire gets attacked by terrorists. He's an arms dealer. And he says, you know what? I'm going to use my weapons for good. I found out that my company was supplying the terrorists, and I was promoting my weapons to save Americans, but they're actually not doing that. Yeah. So I will become the weapon that is needed to save Americans. That is it. That is what this movie's about.
Yeah. A billionaire understanding the wrongs of his...
Yeah.
Of his understanding of, like, no, I'm doing this for good. And, you know, you kind of have, like, that...
It's him not wanting to see the bigger picture, right? And him deciding to open his eyes. I'm no longer looking at the world with my rich boy, you know, like, aquí. I'm going to go, like, you know what? No, you're right. I have to assume responsibility for what I'm doing. And that's what he does. And he creates a weapon. Now, let's add the superhero genre here. That's what's his story. Normal. This could have been a man who just goes by himself, becomes a one-man army, and... goes to the Middle East and wins the war for the Americans. Let's just put it like that. Now, let's add the superhero filter in it. Here's the superhero filter. Marvel Studios just takes the same story, and he goes, you know what? He's Iron Man. Of course, he's going to be able to build an Iron Man suit, which is a suit of armor with a lot of really advanced tech and weaponry, because this man is the owner of a weapons manufacturing company and also technology.
Yeah.
Great movie.
You can really take out the Iron, like you said, like you can take the Iron Man filter.
Take out the superhero genre filter. It's a great movie. I don't know how he wins, like how he defeats America, I guess by shutting down his company and maybe, you know, whatever. But you add the superhero in there. There it is. That is all you need.
Yeah.
Enough said, right? So that's how you write this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Now, I get it. Movies leading up to that. Let's see what's another great movie in terms of writing. The Winter Soldier. Great movie. What is it about? Well, let's go the first one, right? The first Captain America, Captain America, the First Avenger. It's a war propaganda film.
It really is.
But you're glorifying the hero who is literally a soldier. His name is Captain America. You can't really do much there. But how do you do it? It feels like a biopic. It feels like you know, has a little yellow filter. You're in the, you know... En los tiempos de antes, bro.
It's an origin story of this kid who gets chosen for this project, right? Like this
exactly.
project to have super soldiers.
It's like, okay, so it's a propaganda movie.
It is. Yeah.
It's a war propaganda movie. That's what it is. But hey, superhero genre filter. It's Captain America.
Right.
Exactly. That's what this is, right? Second movie. We're in the modern times now. Same hero. He's a spy now. Because what do you do when you return from the war and you still don't want to leave the war? You become a spy.
And I think also, like, this movie...
Special ops. That's what I
mean. Yeah, special ops. This movie is filled with just brilliance of where do you take an old man? He's really an old man, right?
Put a man out of time.
Man out of time. And you're putting him in a society where he thinks, right, like what he did or the years he's been out, it led to good, right? Because, look, freedom is still here. People can run around and all that shit. But it's S.H.I.E.L.D., having that sort of, like, mentality, like, it's there. Hydra, he thinks he got it's done, right? Because I don't see any Hydra. No, they've been undercover all this time.
They've been undercover, exactly.
They're in different names. They're named recognition.
Is it the Cold War?
Interesting. Maybe. So, so the Russo brothers took the character and said, all right, bet. Okay, so war-ridden soldier, you know, modern times. He thinks the war is over. It is not.
It's not. Now it's the war isn't over, but how do you evolve the war from it being in the battlefield? Now it is a more
It's at home.
It's a more cybernetic. It's spying. It's a Cold War essentially, and he's going into these special ops missions. He's working for the government. That's a great movie. Then you add the superhero genre filter and there it is. Captain America is now a spy. Great fucking movie. His friend from the first movie, which we didn't know, by the way. This was a shocker to everyone.
Yeah.
Because in the trailer, all you see is the Winter Soldier. Now, those who do know the story, oh, yeah, Bucky Barnes becomes Winter Soldier. But those who didn't know or didn't, like... they killed him off in the first movie.
Yeah, I saw him die, and he went down.
So I guess they're not going to go down that route.
Claro.
They did. They just surprised us all. When he takes off the mask, we react with... Steve Rogers, Captain America, we react the same way. Bucky, like, oh my god, he's back, he didn't die. And it's clever writing.
Claro.
Sorry, guys, a little bit of technical difficulties. This is, after all, a new studio. But we're back where we left off. We were on the topic of writing, specifically for these movies, and I was going to use another example. Being Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
Guardians of the Galaxy is another really well-written story because, again, we are taking away the superhero filter. What do we have? We literally just have a group of outcasts
lots of family issues.
A lot of family issues, finding each other and making a family amongst themselves.
Yeah.
And each of the movies is the same thing. It's just they are bettering their... You know, their emotional connection.
Right.
And that's another great film. Now we're going to jump all the way, if I was going to use Infinity War. This is in my opinion, it's not the best written one, but it's just really, really well written. It is one of my favorite movies because of the fact that in this one, it is a superhero movie, right? It's an alien invasion movie.
Yeah.
But instead of the government defending, it's the superheroes because, again, this is a superhero movie.
Same.
But then here's the catch. The heroes don't win. The villain wins on this one, and he does it in an amazing display of power. He's not here. He is so powerful that he doesn't have to do much, and that is what's so shocking. That is what makes this villain such, again, this writing, such an impactful villain because he's not over here messing you up. You see a lot of people, emphasis on a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
just working their ass off to try and defend Earth and you know, we split up the team and fight them off in space. And he's not even, like, he's not even sweating. Also, I didn't talk about Civil War, which is another good movie, very well written, but the whole, like, team of heroes has split. So now we have two different factions, two different heroes, a group of heroes, like, working together, but not really. And this is, you could say this is what causes their demise. You could just say, you can use the fact that, no, this is just a really powerful, like, villain. And that's, again, really, really good writing.
Yeah. In terms of Infinity War, while it's not, like you said, like, it's not the best written, I feel like a good majority thinks it's Winter Soldier as, a cohesive, like, a very, from beginning to end, well-written story. For Infinity War, it's a superhero mashup. Obviously, you're going to have some heroes being a little bit more in focus. Iron Man, of course.
Yeah.
Some are not, I don't want to say relegated to, like, the B team or the C team. It's just, dude, you have a lot of characters that, like, try and, like, make sense of it all, you know? And you have to give purpose as to why these heroes are in this predicament. So, from beginning to end, as a superhero mashup, it does the job really, really well. And I think, you know, as we're talking to you and hopefully Kevin as well, you're seeing that the peak was in 2018. And we're not seeing that yet. Yes, there's some bits and pieces of, like, I guess, like, some type of writing, I think, in some episodes of certain shows. Shang-Chi is one of my favorites in Phase 4. Yeah,
using Phase 4 was like a catastrophe.
So obviously, like, we're not seeing the level of quality that we envision. And like you mentioned brilliantly, you had excitement as to what's going to happen next. You don't have a press release or in D23... So these are the movies that are going to happen.
And not only that, these are the movies that are going to happen. This is the cast. These are the characters you're playing. This is, and then when you're online, you have people telling you constantly. So this story is going to focus on this, 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 and that. Oh, this character's going to have a minor role here. He's probably going to do this.
Right, yeah.
And you have all, already know beforehand.
Yeah.
So that kind of takes away from the experience of you being in a movie and going, and actually being impressed at what's happening on screen. Instead, now you're just like, he's here. Let's see this 5 minutes of fame that I already knew you were gonna have. But let me see it in the big screen. It's
a little bit underwhelming because at the same time you're also assuming that even when they tell you outright he's just gonna be there for 5 minutes, but you're kind of hyping 5 minutes of, man, my favorite actor or whatever, like, it's gonna come here, and even that'll be probably underwhelming because since you promised or you just said this actor or actress is gonna come in. You have to put something there to make it seem like, shit, I mean, I know she's a minor character, but I guess I have to put something to make it seem like it's not a waste of a moment, but it's going to be.
Yeah.
Bill Murray, I'm literally just thinking right now.
Exactly.
When Bill Murray announced, like, yo, he's going to be in a minor role.
I didn't even know he was in it. But you know who I did hear, though, is, I forgot his name. The guy from, The Good Place.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to look that up real quick.
Sure. Please, put the name here.
Please do.
Right here. But yeah, so that guy, yeah, he was there. And he was just there.
Yeah, but no, I know.
He's there. And he's a character in this.
William Jackson, there you go.
William Jackson.
So when they announced that William Jackson was going to be there, it was like, that's fantastic. He's a good actor. Good actor, handsome man. He's buff. Surprisingly buff. Mm-hmm. Like, anyone who saw The Good Place, you were like, man, look at this nerd. He's so cute. He takes off his shirt, like, sir? Who knew nerds could be this shredded? I know there's a lot of shredded nerds out there, but, like, again, you fall when you're watching a TV series, you're falling into that.
Of course.
Especially The Good Place. You're like, man, this is such a cute little nerd. Look, he's such a dork. Oh, shit. Dork's got abs. Damn. So when they announced him was going to be in this movie, like, that's amazing. I didn't know what role he was going to be. All I know is that he was going to be in the movie. I was like, that's so cool. I was, like, excited. Then he's in the movie. I'm like, it's not a complaint about him not being cool or anything. It's just like, why was he there?
Mm.
Same with Bill Murray. Why would you put such a great actor? Bill Murray is a very recognizable actor.
Oh, I know. Like, he's a big name, I know.
Exactly. He's a big name actor. And you're like, he's here for, like, a scene. Not even a sequence.
Not even a scene. No.
It's not even a sequence. He's here for a scene. That's it.
You can actually take him off and put a random actor, and it would have served the exact same purpose as if Bill Murray was
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah. And then
he was a means to the answer to the question that we've been having this entire movie.
And then we have Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Incredible actress. Like, from the whole cast,
I was
she's
actually,
up there.
I was surprised when she was in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I was like, wow, yeah. Shelly, they got her.
And they got her, and she was great. The third movie is just her. It's her movie, literally. Not, this isn't a complaint. It's just like, fix your marketing. You know, I saw some, I'm not going to take credit for this. Puerto Rican critic did say this, and I was like, I agree. Like, he needs a TV show about Michelle Pfeiffer and Bill Murray when they were, like, you know, mingling in the quantum verse. He was like, give me that. That's going to be top tier TV. Two great actors? Come on. But yeah, let's not like miss the hit here. Get off track for writing. So those are like, well, that's what is, those are good stories where you're adding in the superhero filter. Now, Ant-Man Quantumania, right? Ant-Man. Let's look at Ant-Man as a character inside of the MCU. Marvel Studios decided this is going to be, apart from every other comedy we add to our movies, which is unnecessary at this point, you give me Ant-Man. This is going to be a comedy movie. It's going to be a heist movie. It's about criminals who aren't necessarily good at their job, but they get the job done. So, and it's a heist movie. It's a bit comedic. Paul Rudd is a good, he's a funny dude. He's a good actor. And I was like, you know what? I really enjoyed the first Ant-Man. The shrinking effects, it's all really, really well. The second movie is yet another heist movie, isn't it again? What's the second one? The second one was like a similar, it was sort of similar, yes, because they were, no, that one was hiding from a government, I think, or something like that.
It was
from ghosts. They were hiding from ghosts. They were running away. Uh-huh. It wasn't really a heist film. I don't remember, but it was still in that like lane of like we're running away. We're stealing something. I don't remember.
It was something about Scott can't leave because he's on house arrest.
There you go.
Shit happened that he needs to be involved.
Again, it's another criminal thing, but for the good reason. So he's on house arrest. So he's not going to be in house arrest so that he can. It's a heist. They are entering the quantum realm to take the Wasp mom back. That's it. It's another heist movie.
Yeah, she get Janet back without thinking that she was there. And we left her for dead. She's here. Okay.
No, but they were receiving messages from her. Apparently.
Dude, I cross fucking that movie because that movie, I swear to God, I watched it with only the intention as to, hey, where's Ant-Man at when the snap
Endgame,
happened?
Infinity War, exactly. So, cute Endgame. Endgame is another, it's literally a heist film because Ant-Man comes up with a plan to save everyone because he's like, what if he didn't invent it. He was like, what if we do time travel? Because, you know, the quantum realm works different. Again, good. Ant-Man Quantumania is literally about, this is the story, and I don't care if you disagree with me because, listen here, buddy.
You got the floor. Just
Janet, who had powers in the second movie, doesn't have powers in this one, apparently. She has no powers. But fuck that, right? What she does have is the ability to have an incredible amount of PTSD, to not talk to her family about the dangers of the quantum realm. Also, she is completely clueless to the fact that a young girl, a teenager, who is apparently a genius now, again, it wasn't established, is working on sending a signal to the quantum realm, right? She's been working, and the teenager, Cassie is working with Hope to just use this as a, and then she's like, she has no idea. This is happening in the basement of her home. She has no idea this is happening. This has never come up into conversation. Every time they talk about the quantum realm, she's like, don't talk, I don't want to talk about it, blah, blah, blah. So then they do that. They end up in the quantum realm, and this is just 40 minutes or 45 of Janet going, trust me, you don't know what's going down here. Yeah, no shit, Sherlock, you never told us. This is very dangerous, we have to hide. How do you know this? Oh, right, you spent your whole life here but never told us. Great. So now this whole thing is going on, right? The group gets separated. Janet knows what she's doing. Scott and Cassie are stuck together. Then they meet Kang. There's a deal to get Janet to come back because there's a MacGuffin in the story, which is a thing that can allow Kang to exit the quantum realm. And it was destroyed. Scott fixes it. There's the heist thing. It's really fucking stupid. So he retrieves it, and then Janet arrives and Hope and whatever, and then they're like, you know what? No, don't do that because he's evil. And they're like, oh, I get it now. Thank you for telling me. You should have told me two years ago. I don't know how long it was, how long it's been. So then Kang goes like, you know what? I'm angry. I'm going to go to the surface with my whole fucking army that I've created, and I'm going to go into the real world or whatever the fuck he wants to go and conquer, because that's what he does. He's Kang the Conqueror. He conquers. No, Ant-Man takes the rebellion of the quantum universe, and he rises up and he fights Kang.
Also, this movie just basically somehow takes the bad things from Star Wars and just plasters it.
I will say this. Marvel, you made a Star Wars movie. Peyton Reed directed a Star Wars movie. This is literally...
But you know what? Instead of Peyton Reed going to, like, New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, no, he went for, like, the sequel trilogy and just said, no. Oh, yeah, that works.
He saw all of them.
No, I don't really think that, bro.
I think he saw... No. He saw all of them because that concept art is really good for the movie, but then the execution is ass.
Mm.
That's how you see the... That's what you get from seeing all of that. So, yeah, the writing in this movie is not good. That's why. Right? Because it just... It's not trying to be... It is literally a superhero movie, nothing more. And I know what you're saying. Oh, what did you expect? I expected a movie with a superhero genre,
a lens. We've been taking
it. Yeah, the superhero lens, and then you add that there. That is how you make superhero movies. That's what makes a movie. This is why the argument, and sue me, this is why Martin Scorsese is in a way correct when he says that superhero movies aren't film. I'm not gonna agree with him when he says that superhero movies are ruining cinema, because they're not, truly. They're making their money and they're getting people to the cinema, and that's the whole point. But when he says that these aren't movies, I agree. They're not. Because when you make a movie, you have different genres. You can mix them. You can match them. You can add, like, what I said, filters. Like I've used for the example of every other movie I used. Iron Man. The three Captain America movies, literally. Guardians of the Galaxy, Infinity War. Like, these are all separate movies and where you add the that lens of a superhero. I'm going to step outside of Marvel Studios. The Batman from the DC. It's not the DCEU, but from DC. Mm-hmm. That is a Batman movie. Is it really? Take away the Batman, like, cowl. It is just another detective movie. It is a civilian taking matters into his own hands. It is a vigilante, because that's by definition, that's what he is, who wants to bring justice on his own accord. It just so happens that he's dressed like Batman.
Yeah.
Enough said. That is how you get good movies. By making a film and then adding that filter later. We're losing daylight here, guys, so I don't know how this is going to look. Probably going to have to adjust lighting soon. That's not the problem. That doesn't matter right now. A lot of shadows. But anyways, let's move on to the next topic here, because I don't think we're going to have time for this, but who knows? Directing. From writing to directing. I can tell you right now, there are only three good directors in the MCU.
And one of them are brothers.
Literally. You have Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
You have the Russo brothers. And you have James Gunn. Those are the only three good directors. And I don't remember who directed Doctor Strange. But I don't remember. But that is another movie that I enjoyed, especially because of the way it was directed. I don't remember the director, but I think he only did that one movie for the MCU, so I'm not going to count him here.
Again, didn't like how the writing and like how he wanted the second one to be. He did, and that's how we got Sam Raimi.
There you go. You see, when you take away the vision, that's what happens. So There we go. That's an excellent segue. I even forgot I was going to do that. Vision. That's what the director adds to filmmaking, right? They add their vision. And I know everybody hates saying hearing that because of all the controversy with, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League and Air Cut and all this shit. But let's focus on, like, what actually happens when you're making a film. So director has a vision. For example, let's say that, to me, the world, I view the world from a very beautiful perspective, and you see it from a much, much darker perspective. You give us the same script, I can direct it one way, you can direct it another. You can get two films. You can literally give three directors the same script, and they will all direct a different movie. Because they are putting their experiences in life, their ideologies, their morale, their views, their vision into the project. Right? Jon Favreau had a vision. His idea was, hey, I want to start this off, and he made a great fucking movie. James Gunn, another director who has really, really good vision in terms of superhero movies. Russo Brothers, same thing. Great. It's just, their vision is phenomenal. Outside of the superhero genre, it's not good. I'm sorry, guys. Work on it. But
you almost got it. It's right.
When you stay in what you're good at, and that's the shocking thing. Peyton Reed, the director of Ant-Man, all three Ant-Mans, by the way.
Yeah. A rarity, actually, in this.
So, I think I'm gonna like step back here and maybe explain to the audience and to you as well. I think sure. I've told you this before. There are two types of directors. There are genre directors, and there are what the French call auteur, le directeur d'auteur. Author director. Okay. I don't know if you say that in English. You typically you say auteur, whatever, but they're authors. Here's the difference. When you have a genre director, they are a director. When you give them a film, they direct it based on the genre. When you have an auteur director, they would direct films, no matter what the genre is, but they always have a very specific directing style. By that definition, do you think you can name at least one director who's an author?
Outside of the superhero
genre? Yeah, outside of the superhero genre. A director who, no matter the film, you will always know that that's him because it has a signature
thing. I mean, outside of the meme of Scorsese, Christopher Nolan, that's one.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I actually do like 300, how Zack Snyder did 300.
Yeah.
I know it's... Yeah. I really can't think of anyone... Right now, on the top of my hand, like, I the one I can really think of is Christopher Nolan, considering that he did do three Batman movies, and, you know, he's able to do, you know, Inception.
Yeah.
And,
but there's always something there that is very much...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His style.
Yeah, yeah, no.
You can see Inception. You can see Tenet. You can see Oppenheimer, who's going to be releasing this year, The Dark Knight trilogy. And you can see those movies and go, that is a Christopher Nolan movie.
The entire trilogy of The Dark Knight is what you said. It is a kid, a billionaire, trying to make up sense as to, oh, shit, this crime shit is not getting better. I guess I have to do it. And weird shit happens, and I need to fix it. And that's where the superhero lens is, because he puts on the cowl. Now you know he's Batman. But he really can take away anything. He can basically not do a Batman movie, and you can just give me a trilogy. You're just this man trying to save...
Of a spy.
Right.
Of a detective.
Right.
Same. There you go. So other directors who are authors, Quentin Tarantino.
Right. Fuck. Yeah,
it's okay. Almost everyone goes for that one, but it's okay. No, you're good. Quentin Tarantino is another type of that director. Ironically, Robert Eggers, who's only had three films, he's already considered an author because every single film has a very unique style that is... It isn't necessarily his, but it becomes a his because of, you know, that's what he uses.
I would say Edgar Wright.
Huh?
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright. That's another. There you go. So, Peyton Reed is a genre director. He directed, I don't remember what the movie was, but it stuck to the genre. And then here, same thing. He took Ant-Man. It's a superhero movie, so he stuck with the genre.
Right.
In the MCU, there are a couple directors who have stepped away from that, but not entirely. those being James Gunn, the Russo Brothers. They still go heavily on the superhero, but they kind of like break away from that. But that is what makes a good movie. When the director has a really good view and they make their vision be seen before anything else. Marvel Studios doesn't have that. They really don't. They when you look up the directors for any of their movies, they haven't directed much. And this isn't criticizing a director's ability to do a good job. It's just the fact that when you care about what you're putting out there, you should consider what your directors are capable of doing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's the resume? This just feels like when they're choosing the directors, it's literally just like, you got any experience? I made a short film, and my actual movie didn't do that good, but I did 5 episodes of a TV show as well. You're hired. That is literally the credentials for almost every single MCU director. Look it up. I am not lying. The only ones who do have a longer resume are the ones I mentioned. The Russo brothers, inside of the MCU, really good movies. Outside, not so much, but at least they know how to direct. Jon Favreau, my man knows how to direct. Literally, he's so good. I really do like Jon Favreau movies.
He did. He got a Hollywood Star Walk of Fame.
He did.
Like. Well deserved.
Yes.
Outside of basically jumpstarting a mega franchise as Marvel, I was gonna piggyback as to you say how Marvel is basically flying writers and directors with tasks they don't know.
Yeah,
and it's I don't know if you touch upon like the writer part. That is an important aspect to a movie.
Yeah,
directing, like you were saying, is like, you are trying to convey the actor, I want this emotion here.
Truth be told, a writer is important, but not really. It is important, obviously, because that's the story.
Yeah, that's the story.
But the director has as soon as the director touches that script, he has the creative power to do whatever the fuck he wants, and he does. That's just how it happens.
Okay.
And once a writer hands off his script, that's it. I sold my script. I can't complain. I can't go to the theaters and go, I didn't write this like this. It doesn't matter. You wanted it to be the way you wrote it, you should have directed it. And this is where writer directors come, which are directors who only direct what they write. And typically, there's a combination here. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. Is it Matt Damon?
I don't know. I don't know what you're going to talk about.
I think it's... it's Ben Affleck. And I'm pretty sure it's Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. They almost always work together. They have a lot of movies together.
Yeah.
Normally, it's Ben Affleck writes with also Matt Damon, and they also direct, or one of them is producing. So that is where you have people who understand each other. But Ben Affleck does have movies that he's written and directed, and they are really good movies. So... if you're a writer and you're going to sit there and complain that, that's not how I wrote that movie, you should have directed it then. As soon as you hand out that script, it's no longer, the director can do whatever the fuck he wants with that script. So that's why, writing, screenwriters, all these things, they are important. But as a director, if you say, you know what, this is silly, I'm going to like change this up a bit, or just, you're not going to redo a script. Some do to some length, but if you look at the way... directors are fucking assholes. You give them a script and they would scribble, and that's what's known as the director's script. So that is what has camera angles, that what he has in mind, all these things, and it's all just red lines. It is so fucking hard to read.
Are you talking about experience?
Yes and no. I've seen what these things look like, and I'm like, I had to do it once. I'm like, I hate the fact that I'm butchering this entire script. But again, that's why you have a lot of copies of the same script.
Right.
And I'm like, damn, this is so weird. And then, when you're directing, it's like a director just grabs a script, and he just does a shit ton of lines, and he's circling this, and there's specific ink, and it's a mess. But you need to learn how to read these things. So... I like you bring up the writing. Yeah, the writing we established writing in the Marvel Studios is not that good. You can have a good, and then if you do have a good, maybe the script was good, Because maybe we butcher the screenwriters a lot.
Yeah.
The director has a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah, like you just mentioned, like if he's taking control over the script and he does it the way that he wanted to.
So in this case, I don't know because I'm not part of the project, so I can't sit here and tell you, oh, he did a good job, he did a bad job. I don't know. So I know my way.
It's really up to interpretation and how we really view movies, right? Like the criteria of us trying to say, like, this is a shit movie, I like this. Yeah. And us even getting this subject up and running, I do think that for the most part, we can't all blame the writer, like you said, the writers and directors, even VFX. When people say like, oh man, this VFX thing is ass and whatever, like, dude, like, you do like when the culture and vividly shown how the culture of VFX teams are with, they mentioned Marvel and just like they mentioned Marvel in general because that was the bigger picture. But every studio does this. And that is where VFX are in this conundrum of where you want your work to be in a film like this. Imagine you saying, hey.
You should be proud like, of hey, what you're doing. Yeah.
You know that movie Quantumania? Yeah, I did some of the effects. You would want that recognition or you want that, like, that say, yeah, right? Now, do you want that?
Do you really want that? No.
And especially with movies on Thor, on Quantumania. And to some degree, all the movies I feel outside of, I'm going to say Shang-Chi, but anyway, regardless of the fact, I just don't think that VFX teams are doing their best, but it isn't because of labor or effort. It's because it's the time constraint and this improvisational scripts that messes up the time flow
you
and messes up.
You completely screw it up because, again, it lacks vision. It lacks direction. Because if you're willing to go like this, and in a moment's we just came up with these notes, just do that. I don't think it's... Kevin Feige said to do that.
Right.
Like, oh, shit, I have to do it. And then it's like it's like fitting a fucking square inside of a circular like hole. It's not gonna fit. And you see that a lot with the Marvel movie. It's just it's a mishap. It's like it's going one direction, then it goes another, and then it's almost like it's being directed by different people. And it is, because this is when Kevin Feige, or whatever the fuck I say it wrong, I don't know, Kevin decides to just start putting things that don't really necessarily work because he just had this, olay. It's like, no, that's not. And to say that this doesn't happen outside, like, for, like, more artsy-fartsy movies, I hate the term, but, you know, that's how the internet responds to that. It does happen, but, again, it is studied. It is approved. It is questioned. And I don't think that these things are questioned when you're making a Marvel film.
They just have... They just
kind of go with the flow.
And they also have a fast food type of feeling.
That's a great way to say.
Like I mentioned. So after Endgame, you see a lot of cohesion. Even though there's some, again, we haven't mentioned all the movies, but there's some movies that are hit or miss, right? There's some movies that you think like, I don't think this movie should have been there.
Yeah, even from Phase 1 to 2, 3, there's a couple of movies that are hits and miss. Like you're like, they should have been here, maybe.
Right. But you see the spacing of how many movies you're getting in a year and kind of have room to breathe to get the hype, I guess, in certain movies, to get the amount of money because again, and we're going to touch about it a little bit right now, they need to make profits one way or another. Whether the movie's ass or whether the movie's good, somehow, some way, someone's going to watch it. Whether we're hate watching it or we love it, it happens. That happens.
Yeah.
So when I mentioned that it feels like a fast food type of vision, and it's, look at 2020. From 2020 to right now, that's 3 years.
3 years.
We've had countless TV shows, and I don't want to count because it's just so many.
It almost feels like we've gotten, in 3 years, we've gotten the same amount of content that we had in 10 years.
They want to fast track, and they don't want to mention that. I have no understanding why people say no. They're not rushing it. They're kind of getting. What do you mean they're not rushing? They're telling us to phase six. We're in five now. it's gonna happen in 2026 because these movies are they're gonna line up and they're so.
They're so sure.
They're so sure that this movie won't have any delays, won't have any misfires, won't have a miscast, won't have a director walking out.
Perfect example. Thor: The Dark World. It's exactly what happened with Thor: The Dark World. And another example, but this one, let's use two examples that were it happened the same thing, two different tragedies, of course. Thor: The Dark World had an issue where directors left, writers didn't finish. It was a fucking that movie should have been adios. Same. Another movie that happened, Black Panther 2. Mm-hmm. We understand what happened though, sadly, Chadwick Boseman passed away. So what do you do here? Hello. For those of you watching on YouTube, we apologize. We have had some video issues. And typically, these are audio issues, but no, it's a video issue. We'll be fixed for the next podcast episode. For now, enjoy our sweet voices, followed along by, I guess, video in the background about what we're talking. For those of you who are listening to us on the podcast, apps, nothing happened. Just random cuts here and there. But no, continuing where we left off with Chadwick Boseman, talk about Chadwick Boseman passing away, comparing Black Panther 2 to, ironically, Thor 2. So two movies which projects probably should have been canceled by their by what happened. They decided to not scrap the projects and keep going because they had already announced that it was going to come out this date, and they had to do it, period. So that is a big problem for a movie studio to just be constantly trying to get you to do things the way they want them to happen. It's like, why? Why are you forcing this on us as a viewer? Because if I would have known that, and I've mentioned this before, that Black Panther 2 was going to keep going, I would have just recast it. I thought they were going to scrap the project, so that's why...
That's what I thought.
I thought they were going to scrap the project and then just work their way,
Reintroduce them at a later date.
Exactly. And I was like, don't recast because I thought they were going to cancel the project, right? When I heard they were going to continue, I'm like, damn, probably should have recast it because you have to force a change in production from a production that has already been established how it's going to keep going, right? So it's a lot of these changes that they don't think about when they announce Secret Wars and Kang Dynasty and all these other projects. Like, you don't take into accountability the fact that these movies might not work. That something could happen where now this won't line up with the other thing.
Even in execution, how the singular movie isn't gonna jumpstart this mashup movement. And it's like, come on, okay. Same thing happened with Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
She kind of got shoehorned in there because she was going to be in Endgame, because then it'd be weird that she's in Endgame and we don't know her.
And that's another mistake. I don't think... She came out in Endgame. But the Russo brothers directed Endgame, too. So the Russo brothers were able to introduce Spider-Man and Black Panther. Two characters, not one, two, in one movie. Captain America: The Civil War. They did not need a previous movie to understand this. So them forcing Captain Marvel on us, again, I hate Captain Marvel the movie. I don't know. It doesn't work for me. I don't hate the actress or the character. She works outside of her own movie, ironically. That's an issue. So when your vision is constantly being do you know who the director for Ant-Man was going to be originally?
Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Edgar Wright?
Yeah.
And he dropped out. Creative differences, actually.
Yeah. Imagine Ant-Man directed by Edgar Wright.
It would have had good coloring and a good story. And yeah, Scott does like some humor here and there, but I think he better understands the character than Peyton Reed.
Is the issue they weren't the creative? You mentioned creative differences. They weren't going to let him direct the way he directs. Yeah. that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a fancy word of saying he doesn't line up to what we want the movie to be.
Exactly. And that's an issue right there. So directing definitely chose. Ant-Man Quantumania, because again, this is what we're doing. Ant-Man Quantumania, where does this fail us? So Ant-Man Quantumania has Peyton Reed as director again, and he wanted to have a big movie. He didn't want Ant-Man to be just another basic movie. He wanted a big movie, right? And so they said, fine. They gave him this, and it's like, you can tell there's no actual directing. The lighting is all the same. I will admit, yes, the Quantum Realm did look nice. It looks okay. The creatures that are in it look very interesting. I wish we could have explored that a little bit more. It does fall into the more like comedic way. Oh, that guy looks like broccoli. It's literally just a broccoli head. There's a little guy who's just goop. He's literally a walking goop. Their houses look like dildos. I'm sorry. And they move and they're alive. I don't know why that needed to be a thing, but it is. And they have rockets that fly. And this is where we start working our way away. Like, we start losing me, right? Because you have a dude that looks like he's made out of paper. But his face, it's like a sort of an illusion type thing. So from an angle, it looks like just paper's kind of like angling. But when you look at it from a different angle, that's his actual face. So there is very interesting character design, but it is not explored because you get distracted by the wacky goop, by the weird houses, by the broccoli man. You see where, like, why do that? Yes, there are also like humanoid creatures, which you always have those, right? It's necessary.
I think they wanted to have the Quantum Realm more alive because they're assuming that, you know, obviously the Quantum Realm, there's like people there and shit, but they just basically did Star Wars.
They did Star Wars. But that's fine because again, we don't know anything about the Quantum Realm. It is an alien place, technically speaking, but I feel like you could have made it, I don't know. I feel like, again, the designs were good. I feel like it could have been maybe better. I think there was too much human. It was too humanized. Like, I enjoyed the Tusken Raiders, you know, the guys whose arms would come back. That was basically a Tusken Raider. It was hilarious. It looks okay. It looks good, but then you have these actors being placed on top of this world that do not fit the lighting, the way they move or react or talk. It doesn't feel like you're there because they're not. They're on a green screen. Good actors can act on a green screen. I'm not saying that the cast of Ant-Man Quantumania are bad actors. Some are subpar, I'm sorry. But again, I'm not here to trash on that. It's the fact that also, you not only needed a good actor, you need a good director. What am I going to use it as an example? Yes, I will. Yes, I will. Callate. Avatar. The director of Avatar. I don't know why I forgot his name all of a sudden. James Cameron. There you go. Thank you. I know you have your riffs with him, but think about it. Yes, taking 10 years to make a sequel is a bit of a stretch. He can do it, though. My man can, and he held up to the fact. He is creating technology. He is advancing the way that film can be used. Star Wars did it with the volume for Mandalorian. That is evolving technology. Yeah. There are directors, I forgot their name. They say, I want this type of camera. What do you say? They create cameras. They're like, I want to use this lens. That's not that doesn't work for, make a camera that works for it or make this lens work for this camera. You're like, holy shit, they are literally creating technology because this is what a director does. In order for his vision to go through, he had a lot of problems during filming. They're filming underwater, literally. How do you take motion capture underwater? We don't know. We're going to take our time to figure it out because he wants this movie to work. There's a green screen. Oh, there's motion capture. They're literally in a room acting with nothing. And their performances shine through because you have a good director who knows what's around you, who is able to explain that, who's able to tell you what you need to do. These people are just like, it says here to do this. That's what it feels like. And I don't want to sit here and say Peyton Reed is a bad director, but from what he's shown me, he's not really directing these movies the way a normal director would. Not a single one has something to tell, specifically this one, that makes me go, yeah, Peyton Reed directed this. No, it just goes, who was the Ant-Man director? Because I know he's directed all three, but what was his name again?
Peyton Reed.
There you go. We know now because they're trashing it, but I'm pretty sure we're going to forget the name in like a month or two.
Say.
Because there's nothing to, like, que me llame la atención.
We can all sum this up to, I guess, our final point, and that is money.
Oh, no, definitely.
Guys, surprise, surprise. We live in a democracy. We live in a capitalistic democracy. And the big mouse needs to make an invest. He made an investment, a very, very generous investment back in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. And they need the return on investment. But how is it that in the first 8 years, 9 years, because Endgame was 2019. How is it in 9 years we actually had good quality movies overall, as a general consensus? So it was great on investment. How is it that these last 3 years, it's not working out in any TV show? Movies aren't doing that good? Or it's not doing that good in your mind, right? Like, if you're having an expectation of, like, has to make 750 million, baby, it does 745. You're thinking, ah, all right, that's fine.
Oh, but audiences loved it.
Oh, but, exacto. Oh, you see the tomato? You see a tomato? The tomato's fresh.
But here's the thing. That's another issue we've had with these movies, right? I was missing a couple of other things we were going to say, but to sum it up, right? I was missing cinematography, VFX, and editing.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. No, you're good. All these things are also, like, when it comes to a movie, I'm going to summarize. So cinematography, that's all about lighting. It's all about camera angles. It's all about how you speak with the camera. Marvel movies, I feel like these past few movies, it feels like the camera's just there. It's not moving. It's not doing anything interesting. The actors aren't doing anything interesting around the camera.
The camera feels like a third person. Like, it's just there. It just so happens that something's happening and you're just watching it.
Exactly.
It's like an observer. Like
exactly. And you know, I know what you're going to say. It's a fucking movie. I know. This happens with a lot of movies. But there's also movies where the camera is telling you the story.
Therefore, we are the camera. We're like, ooh.
Exactly.
What's going on?
And the camera, and you can work with the camera. How? You reveal to the audience something that perhaps the character does not know. See, the camera is giving us insight. You can use it as a tool. The camera is literally, there's a whole language that can be spoken with just a camera. Because you need to think, the camera, I'm not just filming this, the camera is speaking to the audience. So I can show them something and then show them the actors again. The actors don't know what's happening, but we do, right? Instead of a family standing and then just standing there and then a car just hits them, yeah, you're going to be shocked. If you want that, that's good. If you want to build suspense, you show them the car coming. You show me the family, then you show me the car coming. You pan to the family again. Shit, it's going to hit him. That is going to build up suspense. That is going to build up anxiety on you. And then when it happens, they don't hit him. It was a fake. It was a fluke. Or it does hit him and you're like, fuck, because you're waiting. That's how you build it up. Hitchcock, ironically, he was Hitchcock. He used to show people, the audience, he used to show them what was going to happen. Something, it was fucking beautiful. So let's say one of his famous, it's a shame that we lost the video, but one of the things that he used to do, let's say that we're having a conversation. Mm-hmm. You would hear the conversation, but you were looking at a bomb underneath the desk. And then he would show that we are talking on top of the desk. It's not like an audio from another place. No. It's literally underneath. We have no clue. The audience does. And they can now see that the bomb is ticking. They see the timer, and they know that we are clueless. And that is building up tension to when it finally blows up. That is cinematography. That is how to use your camera to talk. Lighting is another great thing. People think, oh, just light it, let's go. No, lighting also tells a story. Color, lighting. La La Land is one of my favorite movies in terms of using lighting as a language.
Mm-hmm.
So good. You should definitely watch it. Actually, we have plans on doing that.
Yeah.
We have plans on watching La La Land and then discussing it here. You can't see me, but I just gestured the desk to where we are. So that's that, cinematography. VFX and editing, just to make it short and simple, give them their time to shine. Don't see them as just a tool. See them as the potential that they can give. When you give them time to craft what you should have already discussed in the pre-production, because VFX is also discussed in pre-production. Editing, not so much, but VFX are. when you get the time, when you get to the point where you are adding the visual effects and editing this movie, you shouldn't be, oh, I think I want to add two more buildings here. I think I want to, the lighting, the shots does not match.
Right.
So this is where you come with clunky scenes, exhibit, plastering it fucking on the screen. I'm going to say behind us, but it's on the screen. Cassie running around in Ant-Man 3. When she shrinks and she's running, that looks really bad. The fact that there's a war happening behind them, and then their lighting is very soft. It's a very, they have a sun directly behind them, and then they have really good lighting in front of them. It should be more of a shadow, more of a dark. They don't work. They don't play with that, and that is something that's disturbing. So when you give your VFX artists and your editors their time to shine, trust me, you're gonna have good movies. So back to why this is. By the audience is so annoying me a lot. It's not, look, yes, I know all of these terms because I studied this and I am what you would call a film junkie, is that what it's called?
Right? Sure,
like,
yeah.
I consume films, period. Doesn't matter what it is. I just consume films. When you watch a lot of movies, and then here's the thing. So you can know a lot about movies and not care a lot and just enjoy them, period. You can care a lot about movies like I do, where I do notice these things. And I notice them because I studied them. And I don't go to a movie. So usually I watch movies more than once. I see the first one as an enjoyment. I'm just there to watch a movie. I see it again to see all the technical aspects of the movie. Marvel movies, I can only see them once, sadly. And it's because there is no enjoyment, because the failures are just in your face for me. But this has made this, the audience has now made it so that a movie successful because of how much money it makes. That shouldn't be a success for you. That should be a success for the production company, for the studio, for Disney.
Disney, yeah.
So yeah, Ant-Man Quantumania, in the eyes of Disney, like you said, is not a bad movie, and they're never going to fix their shit because they're going to keep making money. Apart from that, they have theme parks, they have merchandise, plushies, toys, all of these things. They're always going to benefit from that. But the fact that they have managed to get the audience to think that because of the fact the movie made a lot of money, it is successful, that's where you lose me. That is where I can't have an argument with people who just say, "Papi, pero, look at the box office numbers." It's not about box office numbers.
I'm going to put one name that you're going to enjoy. The Whale. Did it make a lot of movie?
What?
Did it make a lot of money?
I don't know. I don't think it made a lot of money.
Was it a great movie?
It's a fantastic movie. It's a movie I can only watch once because it hit me to my core. It is a rough movie to watch. It was the first movie that I saw where... Typically, when you get emotional in a movie, it's because what's happening or the character reminds you of someone. This was the first movie where, yes, it's a bit more personal, but it was for like the first 10 minutes of the movie. After that, I forgot I was invested in the character. The character, the actor sold me this character, sold me this pain because of its performance. This was the first movie that did that to me where I fucking bawled, not because it reminded me of someone I knew, but because I can sympathize with this actor. That is how good the acting was in this movie.
But it made a lot of money.
I don't think it made a lot of money.
So that means, you know, it's not a bad movie.
You look at the reviews, it's kind of, it's not like super high. I think it's like 70-something. Or 60, I think it was. It's not a super high rating, but it's still a really good movie in terms of acting. I would tell you, hey, watch that movie for the acting. Directing, it's okay. It's not, again, it's a very simple movie.
The actors carry
the movie. Specifically, Brendan Fraser, obviously, he's the lead, but it's, wow. But then you're like, oh, Ant-Man Quantumania made a shit ton of money. It's successful. My guy, you can't base your movie success on that. And then you go to let's do the reviews. Audiences say amazing. Critics say it's bad. Critics don't know what they're talking about. You have no idea how much that pisses me off. Because a lot of people do this on the internet. I know it's a lot of TikTok. Oh, that's what happens when critics don't prepare for a movie. What the fuck am I doing? Joining the military or fucking watching a film? Do I need to train for this? No.
And there's some, and they're assuming that critics don't watch every single movie that they need to review because that's their job. That's their job.
And then and this is the other thing. I understand that what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has made is this, a really big universe that it's all interconnected. However, where they failed is the fact that I need to watch every single fucking movie from the past to understand another movie. That shouldn't be the case. That should not be the case. That is like, that's like Lord of the fucking Rings trilogy. I'm sorry, all of the fucking movie people and the geeks and Peter specifically, I am sorry, my friend, but you take those movies, you can't watch them independently. You can't.
I watched the third one,
You know what you saw? The ending. That movie is just 3 hours of an end. Because that is what the MCU is becoming that. You're just watching Ant-Man. What is it? It's just it's a beat. Fuck. It's like a sequence of a grander scheme of things. Why does it need to do that? Why does it need to be that? Where is the enjoyment in watching a half-assed story? I'm not a fan of the Lord of the Rings trilogy because of the fact that it is not a single movie. 1, 2, and 3 don't tell a story individually. They tell a story together. And what you're going to say, yeah, that's what a trilogy does. Yes, but here's the problem. If you see the second one, it doesn't work without the first one. Because the second one is the middle, is the development that is established from the first one, and it's what leads up to the ending, which is the third one. The second one does not have a beginning, middle, or end. No. The second one is just the middle of this story. I'm going to use an example, which, Peter, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Fuck you. The point is, I always use this example, the Planet of the Apes trilogy. I know, cringy, right? Ape. And the new ones I'm talking about, obviously.
Okay.
All three movies tell a grand story, but each movie has a beginning, middle, and end, and they all have different messages, and they all work.
Good man. You mentioned the name. Like, please don't shit on it. Please, this is a fantastic trilogy.
No, this is a great trilogy.
Okay, I was like, oh god.
No, I love this trilogy because of the fact that they tell the story separately but together. The MCU doesn't know how to fucking do this, and it pisses me the fuck off. You know why I'm excited for the new DCU whatever? Uh-huh. Because James Gunn is obviously in charge, but because I have a really good feeling that these are going to be separate movies that work together, not movies that tell a long story, because that's just going to come and bite you in the ass eventually.
You know, I think they're comic books, right? They're adapting what's in the comics, brought to life. There's a lot of comics to cover. Not all the comics interconnect with other set comics.
Even
if the said character, say, I'm top of my head, it's a Spidey comic that just so happens, Steve Rogers is just right there. Do I need to watch
read the entire whole Captain America fucking
to know why issue? He's there?
No, he's just there. That's technically how the MCU felt back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, no.
First phase, just that.
He's just that. There.
I mean, it just so happens that I'm thinking about the Thor movie. Like, I mean, Thor's hammer's there. That's cool.
Not only that, the first Thor movie. Who's there? Oh, that's fucking Hawkeye. Just casually there. Iron Man 2. Oh, look at that.
Scarlet Witch.
Fuck. I can do the same mistake. Black Widow. Just there. Casually there.
And she's like almost like a secondary character.
She is. In the story, she does work as a secondary character, but she's just shoehorned in there. You're like, oh, look at that. It's Black Widow. But the shocking one is the one from Thor. The first Thor. Look, it's just Hawkeye. He's just there. Casually there. Then he just keeps getting more and more interesting and yada, yada, yada. Right, but estás diciendo ahora que yo necesito saber exactamente. You need to know exactly where each of these characters have been, will be. It's tiring. Especially when some of the projects are unwatchable.
Yeah.
You fail at actually giving me a cohesive story, it's just not good.
There's a lot of movies. I mean, there's not a lot. Phase 4 has a lot of movies that not even as a background I would put that shit on.
No.
Not even as like, ah, pon el Thor Love and Thunder por decirte así, and do whatever the fuck. I can't. Because I'm going to look, remind myself that I watched this.
Bro, if you know...
And hear the fucking ghost.
You got me. You're going to go for the ghost and go like, oh, fuck, it's this movie. My closing statement here, right? We use Iron Man as an example for the beginning because that's how you make a film. You look at the behind the scenes, they're making a movie. Look at the behind the scenes of Ant-Man Quantumania. Everyone looks lost, I'm assuming. I'm just making a joke there. But, yeah.
And also, all of them are just wearing the same fucking suits. The whole thing, that, yeah, we'll just put it in post.
Yeah.
Where's the individuality on that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I mean, not even on Spider-Man.
In Endgame, I get it, why they would have the same suit. They just never really had it done.
Yeah.
Because them having the same suit, like, the technology blending made sense. But, like, outside of that, there's no need for that to be. It just kind of sucks that they never had that plan. That's pre-production stuff, my guy. You can't start a movie without knowing what the costume's going to be. Oh, we'll just CG edit. Yeah, you can. But is it really your best option? It could if you give your fucking visual effects artist the time to make it look good.
But that's just that's just lazy production.
It is.
Just lazy.
It is.
They just want to. It's ironic, right? Because they would assume that that's...
They're looking for the easy way out. They're looking for the easiest, fastest way to make a movie, to release it, to make more money, to then make that again. And what we are asking people to do is to just don't accept this. Because the biggest argument, it's Marvel, they never fail. Oh, it's just setting up for a new one. Oh, you didn't know this? Oh, you're not getting it. Because they're setting up.
I don't know.
I'm not here to look for an excuse as to why it's good or bad. I'm here to tell you, is the MCU bad? Answer, no. Are MCU movies bad? Yes. Because they are not movies anymore. You answered it perfectly at the beginning of the episode. You said, it's getting bad. Yes, it is. It is. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we reached the point where it's like, it's no longer getting bad. It is just bad. And it shows... Ant-Man Quantumania was like the starter for like what's the fucking
I think the
bomb
precedent
that,
the precedent of this movie is what lingers. Phase 5 hitting it out of the park, considering that Phase 4 was obviously, I mentioned it earlier, obviously COVID hit production. I am 100% understandable.
Yes,
why you need to, hey man, listen, we can't get infected. There's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of lives at that point.
Yeah,
we didn't
so
have the vaccine.
You have to work around it.
Work around it, right?
But now it's, like you said, 3 years later. It's been 3 years. We're out of that.
But just as we mentioned, would it be better to just move the production a little bit more?
Yes. You lose money. But
claro.
You are a company who has money.
Oh, man, you lost $1 billion. I'm so sad. Anyways, like you have the Avengers complex.
Exactly. In
Disney, California. So,
bro, like, just announce a new Lego set and trust me, you'll make the money back.
Claro. Yes.
It's not that hard. But
so, as I was saying, like, there's no love in making these movies.
God,
it's a lot of...
There it is.
It's a lot of... I have to make it because, obviously, I mentioned it, you know? Like, I can't say no, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't say, oh, well, Blade's out. Por decirte, para darte un ejemplo. Because that was a movie that, like,
which
was... Blade? Blade was like, yo, I don't even know if that's happening. Because I remember Mahershala Ali having that brilliant, like, yo, I'm in the MCU. I'm like, oh, shit. This actor? That was in 2019. We're in 2023. The last thing I think we heard, I think they got a new writer and they got a new director. And they think they're going to start either late this year or early 2024.
Late this year.
With what, oh, and also, like, a lot of the budgeting seems weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's some movies that,
it's almost like they start filming and then they're like, save the receipts, so then we can charge. It's like, what? I get that. I can see how it feels that way, definitely. But yeah, I'm gonna use one last example to finish us off, right? We already answered the question. Yes, the MCU is bad. I don't care. You can fight. That's just the answer. Period. Eternals.
Right. The artsy-fartsy one.
This is the only movie in the MCU where you have a Oscar winner director who is bringing locations. We've used locations before, but she's going out of her way to go, I want these locations, and they look amazing. The costume design, I'll be honest, I really like the costumes. People didn't like it for some reason. I liked them. They were real. I wasn't CG. Well, yeah, they had some CGS aspect, but they had the real suits there, and there was a whole process on making them and as to why. There was a story. There was lore behind why the costumes looked like that. The story, look, I don't know. It was an okay story, I'll admit. It wasn't like the greatest thing I've ever seen, but I really enjoyed the powers that these people had and all these things. It did kind of give me this perception of, like, you know, the story-wise, I'm like, it kind of feels weird. Like, they're very powerful. Why have we never heard of them? They've never been here, which is the issue that we're having constantly. It's like, more heroes come, and we're like, why are you here?
Who invited you?
This is the only movie, right? Everyone hates this movie, and I'm going to tell you why. They're blaming it on, obviously, the woke agenda.
Of course.
So and the fact agenda. That the movie didn't make any money. Mm. That is it. The movie actually had an okay story. It wasn't easy nor hard to digest. It had some very realistic, real-world problems being placed upon the movie, and you're ruining it for me. You're making it too real. It's a movie. Movies are fictional reality put into place. That's just what it is. There's nothing more there. That's fine. So, yeah. Are these movies good? No, they're not. All they care about is making money, and I love the way you ended it. Was beautiful. There is no love in making these movies anymore, and it shows. It shows, man.
And it's depressing because, you know,
this is a franchise that I've been watching since I was a kid.
2008, I remember watching Iron Man.
Yeah,
I went 2012, I remember vividly where I was, with who I was with my parents, when I watched Avengers.
Dude,
and I said, this shouldn't work.
But it does.
There's a lot of people, you know, a lot of actors to you know, in a way, like, have their time to shine. The story needs to make sense to have all of them. And it works. And it made money, right? Because obviously that's the equivalent. But there was a tension. There was a plan. There was an idea, right?
Yeah, there was an idea.
Famous words. There was an idea. And I saw that idea come to life. Right now, I don't see that idea.
They can claim that they take their retreat to plan the 10 years, but it doesn't feel like they're planning. And you know what? And if you do plan, keep it to yourself. Because things might not always go to plan. And we, the audience, is going to get mad at you. Me, I don't care. By the way, I'm ending this right now because this has been gone for far too long. We promised you guys that episodes were going to be an hour and maybe hour 30. This is going now for almost 2 hours.
That's 1 hour.
It's 1 hour and 30.
1 hour and 30.
We're almost there. All right, we're good. Sorry, man. It feels like we've been here for a while.
It does.
This is the last time I'm personally going to talk about these movies. I'm going to give it some time.
Okay.
I'm going to keep watching the movies. We're going to keep reviewing them in the channel. That's fine. But I am no longer going to sit down, digest why it is that we don't like them, why it is that we're disappointed, why it is that it is so frustrating. Because, again, I keep watching because these were the movies that made me go, I want to study film. Ironically. Yes, I also like movies in general. But it was the experience of going to the theaters all the time with my dad, then with my friends, and then by myself with my girlfriend. It's become this sort of cultural thing for me where I cannot do it. I want to stop, but now I have content to make, and I really want to make the content. I'll admit it, yes. But I will no longer make a really full-length in video like this where I'm like, this is why this. I'm done. I'm tired. They're just bad. Why? Because they are. They're not movies. They're very long trailers. They're very, like, exposition sort of things. We're like, ha, look at this hero do cool shit. I'm not here for that. I'm here to see heroes struggle to become characters that are growing up within themselves with their powers or without their powers. Fucking Man of Steel is a great movie because of the fact that you're taking Superman, a man who is literally a god, and you make him have issues with himself. It's a human story about a hero. When Marvel learns how to do that, I'll start giving it more fucking, yes, this is a good movie. I'll keep praising them, but for now, I can't. Sorry. And it sucks. It's disappointing, like you say, because of that. I saw Iron Man 1 with my dad. I think I saw Avengers with my dad and some friends. When Infinity War and Endgame came, I saw it with my dad. I didn't see it with my friends. I saw it with my dad because I said, you know what? It's been 10 years, Dad. Let's watch this together. Even though I stopped after a while because, you get your friends and you have the ability to go out by yourself. Yeah. But that movie, I said, Dad, no, we're watching together.
Yeah, it's a celebration or it's some sort, right?
And this was before we could actually save the seats. So when we got there a little bit late. And we ended up really on the front row, and I said, fuck this. I did not wait 10 years for this. I stood up, and I started looking for seats. I found the seats all the way at the top row. Okay. Let's fucking go. Okay. I saw that movie. That was beautiful. And those are the moments that I want to cherish. And I can't cherish those moments anymore because, sadly, they're not here. So, guys, if you either agree and or disagree with us, please leave in the comments. We want to know. Civil discourse, as always. Sorry for the very long episodes and technical difficulties. This is technically our first time recording in the new studio. We will take into account all of these things, and we will make it better for you guys as well. Anyways, if you enjoyed what we talked about here and you agree with everything, make sure you like. If you don't agree with everything, still like and specifically subscribe because you are the audience we're looking for. The people who don't necessarily agree, who will start a conversation and will get us to actually have good episodes like this. Yeah. We like to discuss these sort of things. We are planning also on bringing people over. We don't know how we're going to do that, but we will soon. Because I want people who disagree with us so we can have more debatable stuff.
Oh, I thought we were just going to fight or something.
No, we're not going to be fighting. We're going to be civil because we're not those kinds of people.
Oh, okay. Damn.
So again, make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe and hit that bell notification so you know when we release new videos. For you guys on the other platforms, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one, and have a good day.